Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the bidder information session for the March 2026 solicitation. This is the third solicitation under PECO 6 default service program. My name's Katie Orlandi. I work for NERA Economic Consulting. NERA works as the independent evaluator for PECO's DSP 6. With me today is Luke Heald from NERA, who will be presenting, and also representatives from PECO, who will be available to help answer any questions we receive at the conclusion of the presentation. So, in today's presentation, I'm going to provide the relevant background information on the DSP6 program, details on the qualification and bidding process, and I'll also cover solicitation specific information, including the products available, and we'll walk through the schedule. So all lines have been placed on mute, but you can ask us written questions by using the chat icon. You just click on the chat icon, type in your question, and hit enter. This is also how you can get into contact with us throughout the presentation if you have any technical difficulties with Zoom. So before we start, I just want to make a note that any statements herein describing or referring to the documents and agreements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by reference to the governing documents. The governing documents are the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission order related to DSP 6 and dated November 7th, 2024, the RFP rules and the addendum to the RFP rules, which were issued on December 15th and January 12th, respectively, and the PECO Energy Company Pennsylvania Default Service Supplier Master Agreement, or Uniform SMA as we'll call it today, which was also issued and posted to the website on December 15th. So these documents are all available on picoprocurement.com. Documents related to the proceeding with the commission are available on the regulatory page. And then all of the RFP documents, the contract, are posted to the supplier information page. So NERA serves as the third-party independent evaluator for solicitations held under DSP 6. Our role is to ensure a transparent process for the RFP. So specifically, we are your main point of contact. So you'll come to us with questions, you'll submit documentation to us. We will ensure that the RFP rules as approved by the commission are followed and the qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We will evaluate the bids on a price-only basis on the bid date, and then we will report to the commission on the results, of the solicitation. So the agenda is as follows. I'm going to take the first half of the presentation. I'll provide background on DSP6 program and then the specific information for March, including the products available. And then I'll do a section on the RFP process, the calendar, and then walk through some slides on the contract details and rates. I'll then pass the presentation to Luke. He'll provide details on how to qualify to bid, the bid submission process, and then he'll give an overview of the RFP website and how to get in touch with us throughout the solicitation if you have questions and such. And then at the end of the presentation, we can answer questions. So under DSP 6, PECO will procure full requirement service for their default service customers. Default service customers are those customers that do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier or return to PECO after receiving service from an EGS. As listed in bullet four here, full requirement service includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and alternative energy portfolio standard or AEPS requirements. Under DSP 6, there'll be solicitations in each March and September from 2025 through 2028. And the supply period procured is June 1, 2025 through May 31st, 2028. But there will be some contracts that extend beyond this period. In this March solicitation, there are products available for all three customer classes. The residential class consists of all residential customers. The small commercial class consists of commercial customers with less than 100 kW of annual peak demand. And the consolidated large commercial and industrial class, which I'll refer to as CCI, consists of customers with 100 kW or greater of annual peak demand. This table here provides the payment structure, the available contract lengths, and the procurement frequency for each of the classes. So, suppliers of products for the residential and small commercial classes are paid on the basis of the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. So, the bid submitted is an all-in price. Products for these two classes are available twice a year in both March and September, and the contracts are for laddered and overlapping 12 and 24-month supply periods. Suppliers for the CCI class are paid on the basis of three components. So, first, energy price to PJM's day-ahead market at the PECO residual aggregate zone, capacity obligations priced to PJM's reliability pricing model, and then the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. A product for the CCI class is procured once a year in March, for a 12-month supply period. So for each class, the default load is divided into a number of tranches so that each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load for the class. So for the residential class, there's a total of 62 tranches, and each one represents 1.6% of the default load for this class. There are 24 tranches for small commercial, so each tranche represents 4.17%. And then there are eight tranches for CCI, so each tranche represents 12.5% of the default load. This slide here also provides the total peak and default peak, and then an approximate megawatt measure of a tranche. This data was updated as of January 2026 and would be relevant to the upcoming 26-27 planning year. So, the naming convention for each product available in the solicitation is as follows. Each product has three labels. First is the customer class, second is the length of the supply period, and third is the date of the start of the supply period. So, there are two products available in the solicitation for the residential class, a 12 and a 24-month product. The supply period for both of these products will start on June 1, 2026. Same deal for small commercial. The available tranches are for 12 and 24-month products starting June 1, 2026. And then finally, there's a single product for the CCI class, again, starting June 1, 2026, and for a 12-month supply period. There are load caps that apply so that a supplier cannot supply more than a certain percentage of the default load for a class at any point in time. The load caps in this solicitation will account then for products that have won in solicitations under DSP 6 and even DSP 5 and have a supply period that are overlapping with the upcoming supply periods starting June 1. So suppliers for the residential and small commercial classes cannot supply more than 50% of the default load at any time, and suppliers for the CCI class cannot supply more than 75% of the default load at any time. And if you're looking for more information on the load caps and, you know, really the detailed specifics of the products, you can go to the addendum to the RFP rules and review that document. So on this slide, we do provide the available tranches and load caps for the residential products. So for the 12-month product, there's 12 available tranches. And for the 24-month product, there are 9 available tranches. And so as I mentioned before, there's a total of 62 tranches for this class and a load cap of 50%. So in the case of the residential class, load caps for a bidder will be calculated as 31 tranches. 62 times 50% minus the tranches that a supplier is currently serving for products with a supply period that overlaps the upcoming supply period. And so we've provided here in this table the list of the products that would overlap with the June 1 start, so that a bidder can calculate their load caps on their own. We also provide these load caps within the bid form that's provided to qualified bidders. This slide addresses the load caps for the commercial products. They're calculated the same way for small commercial. So there's two products available. Again, there's six tranches available for the 12-month product, three for the 24-month product. For load caps, there's a total of 24 tranches for this class. So suppliers are constrained on the number they can bid to 12 minus the number of tranches they're supplying for the products that are listed in bold on this table. The load cap for CCI is six, and it'll apply to all bidders. So that concludes the upfront portion with an overview of the products. I'm going to move now to the RFP process overview and start here with the schedule. So the RFP process is going to kick off next week. We're going to open the Part One form, and then it's going to proceed over the next 5 weeks. It's pretty quick. So first, applicants can start submitting the Part One proposal with their qualification materials beginning Feb 12. When the form becomes available, and you must have your Part One material submitted by noon on February 24th. Applicants that qualify will be notified that they can submit a Part Two by the Part One notification date on Thursday, February 26th. And then the following day, applicants can start submitting their Part Two materials, which includes posting pre-bid security. And the Part Two date for this solicitation is March 5th. We'll notify bidders whether they've qualified to submit bids on the Part Two notification date on Monday, March 9th. And then the next day is the bid date, so Tuesday, March 10th. By the following day, on the 11th, the independent evaluator will submit its report to the on the RFP results to the commission. And then the commission will render its decision on whether to accept the results by close of business the following day, March 12th. So as I mentioned, the RFP results on the bid date are contingent on PUC approval. We're going to submit that report on the winning bids to the PUC by the day after the bid date, and then they'll issue their decision within 1 day of receipt of that report. And then 15 days after the bid date, some information, including the average winning bid price, will be posted to the website. Notably, the names of winning suppliers is not posted. So the proposal process is going to be entirely online. You're going to submit the Part One and the Part Two materials through online forms or by email. These materials include providing required information about the bidder and then uploading some supporting documents. You'll also be required to upload email signature pages that we refer to as inserts. We will provide these inserts to you in Microsoft Word format, and you'll be able to review the rules regarding signatures and how to complete and submit these inserts within each document. And then finally, the pre-bid letter of credit, which is what you'll use to post pre-bid security with your Part Two, must also be submitted electronically by email. So as I mentioned, both Part One and Part Two will require submission of these inserts. The inserts are posted to picoprocurement.com on the supplier information documents page at this time. We just want to note up front that they're zipped based on status of the applicant. So if the applicant is new, meaning they have not qualified in a solicitation under DSP 6, which started with the March 2025 solicitation, you'll need to download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts New Bidders. Applicants that have qualified under DSP 6 but have not had a winning bid should download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts Previously Qualified Bidders. And then applicants who have had winning bids in a solicitation under DSP6 should start with the P1 inserts default suppliers. And so it's important that you start with the right set of inserts. So if you have any questions about your status, please do get in touch with us. I just also wanted to note at the bottom of this screenshot here, you can see there's a zip file labeled P2 inserts early. This zip file contains all of the inserts that require a signature and are due with the Part 2 proposal. So if it's convenient to you to have your officer make all of the signatures at one time, you can go ahead and submit those Part 2 inserts early with Part 1, and we'll process them at that time. So, if you're a new applicant and you have not yet registered for an account to access the online forms to submit your proposal, you should go ahead and do that now, or as soon as possible. You'll register by going to picoprocurement.com and clicking on the Contact Us link on the left-hand side, and then clicking on Register for an Account link and filling in the information. You could also send us an email with the information that's requested here in this screenshot. And so it's the individual who registers for the account that's going to receive the email prior to the Part 1 window with account activation instructions. Current account holders do not need to re-register through the website or by email. A current account holder is an applicant that is qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2024 or later under DSP 5 or 6, or an account holder that has registered as of 2024. So, for a bidder that has qualified in the last 2 years, the representative of the last solicitation is going to receive an email with the activation link prior to the opening of the Part 1 form. If you're an account holder as of 2024, but you've never participated, then the individual that registered at the time when you received your first account will receive the email with an activation, the activation link. At that time, we're also going to send instructions for how to access and complete the form, and there'll be screenshots for you to so you can work out sort of how to activate your account. Once your account is active, you can navigate to the online forms to fill out the applications by going to dspproposal.com. You can always access this application site as well from the RFP website. There are links on both the left and right-hand side. So that concludes an overview of the process, and I'm going to step through some slides now with contract details and talk a little bit about rates. So the uniform SMA for DSP6 was unchanged from DSP5, except for the addition of the capacity proxy price true-up mechanism. We provide a link here on this slide to a red line of the current DSP6 contract compared to DSP5. This is just for convenience to hopefully ease in a legal review if you have not participated still since DSP5. Notably, there's an Appendix D within the SMA, and this provides to you the PJM billing line items. And identifies the responsible party, either PICO or the default supplier, for each item. Also, we want to note that default suppliers must complete an Appendix H form of generation supply report and provide a percentage breakdown of energy supplied by source by March 31st of each calendar year. And then, lastly, a note on the contract that RFP bidders that adhere to the ISDA-US stay protocol. Can elect for both the RFP bidder and PICO to execute an Appendix I at the point of contract execution in order to incorporate necessary terms of that US stay protocol if it's applicable to you. This slide provides the credit requirements. So for the fixed price products, credit exposure to PICO is based on a calculation of mark-to-market exposure that's net of accounts receivable or accounts payable to the supplier. For the spot price product, credit exposure begins at $250,000, and is recalculated monthly. So whether a supplier has to submit financial guarantees during the term of the contract will be dependent on a credit evaluation that's specified in the contract. And each RFP bidder will receive the results of the credit evaluation based on the financial documents and ratings that are provided in the Part 1 proposal with the Part 1 notification, which will be well ahead of contract execution. If a financial guarantee is required, it can be posted in the form of cash, a letter of credit, or in the form of a guarantee. And there are standard forms of the guarantee and letter of credit that are posted and available already as exhibits to the uniform SMA. So default suppliers are responsible for providing alternative energy credits during the term of the Uniform SMA for PECO to comply with its Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard Act requirements. An alternative energy credit is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. All solar credits must be compliant and eligible to be retired in Pennsylvania. If any requirement under the AEPS Act changes during the term of the SMA, then it's the default suppliers who are responsible to comply with new obligations. The current obligation for each type of AEC is provided here at the bottom of this slide. We want to note that each default supplier, if you win during the transaction confirmation process, will be required to specify the average cost for each type of AEC that will be supplied. So, under the terms of the Uniform SMA, a default supplier's AEPS obligation may be reduced by a number of AECs allocated by PECO to default suppliers. The number of AECs per tranche that will be allocated towards a supplier's obligation for the products available in the solicitation are provided here in this table. But please note that any of these PECO AECs that are allocated to your obligation will remain the property of PECO and they're not transferred to the supplier. This slide provides just a few details here on rates. So the default service rates for a class are calculated on the basis of prices determined through the RFP and incorporate a quarterly true-up, and administrative costs. For the residential class, rates also include purchases by PECO to serve approximately 1% of their default load. Information about how PECO serves this 1% is provided in the rules, and new for DSP6. PECO will be holding a solar RFP to contract directly with solar projects for energy capacity and AECs to offset spot purchases related to this 1%. PECO also offers time of use default service rate options for their residential and small commercial default customers with smart meters. The TOU options are not applicable to customers in PECO's customer assistance program. And we have a link here at the bottom of the slide that you can use to go to a default service rate calculation model if you'd like to review that. So, on this final slide here in this section, we provide some details on PECO's agreement with the New York Power Authority. So, under a multi-state agreement, PECO receives for the benefit of its residential customers an annual allocation of capacity and associated energy from the St. Lawrence Hydroelectric Project that's operated by NYPA. The allocation is dependent upon the number of residential customers that PECO serves, and it's 5.807 megawatts for the energy year 25-26. Importantly, the suppliers residential tranches are the share of the default load for the residential class that excludes this allocation. Suppliers are not responsible for any products or services related to this allocation from NYPA. So with that, I'm going to pass the presentation over to Luke, and he's going to start the second half with details about how to qualify to bid.
All right, thank you, Katie. In this section, I'll go over the details of the RFP process and how to qualify. This will include both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals. We also encourage you to refer to both the RFP rules and the addendum to the RFP rules, which are posted to the documents page of the RFP website. The RFP process proceeds through several stages. The first stage is the optional alternate guarantee process, which I'll discuss on the following slide. This process is strictly optional, and the first deadline related to this process has already passed. All applicants that want to qualify to submit bids must complete the Part 1 proposal to meet the qualification standards of the RFP. Only RFP bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 proposal can move on to the Part 2 proposal. Bidders that submit a successful Part 1 proposal will be able to participate in a bid submission training, and bidders that successfully complete the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will become eligible to submit bids on the bid date. As I mentioned on the previous slide, the alternate guarantee process is entirely optional, and the first deadline related to the alternate guarantee process has now passed. This process is for RFP bidders that have corporate policies that preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee appended to the uniform SMA. Bidders may use an alternate form of guarantee and request consideration from PECO for the use of that alternate form. The deadline to request a review of this form was January 27th. Separately, RFP bidders will have the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard guarantee during the Part 1 window. So, for purposes of completing the Part 1 proposal, there are three types of bidders. The online Part 1 form is dynamic and allows for an abbreviated process for default suppliers and previously qualified bidders, meaning that these bidders will be able to skip certain sections and items that they've already completed in a prior solicitation under DSP-6. The three types of bidders are new bidders that have not yet submitted a successful Part 1 proposal under DSP-6, previously qualified bidders that have submitted a successful Part 1 proposal under DSP-6 but have not won tranches, and default suppliers that have qualified and won tranches and executed the uniform SMA with PECO under DSP-6. As I go through the next couple of slides, there will be notes to let you know which bidders must submit the information as listed. There are six discrete requirements for the Part 1 proposal. First, applicants must submit contact information for the RFP bidder and the officer who will be able to execute the contract and bind the bidder. This individual will be responsible for signing all the certifications and representations in both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals. The representative is the individual who will serve as the main point of contact for the bidder, and optionally, the bidder may submit contact information for up to three nominees who will be copied on correspondence between the bidder and the independent evaluator. Second, bidders must submit financial information, including the most recent quarterly financial statements and credit ratings. Additional information will be required for bidders submitting a proposal under an agency agreement. Third, bidders are required to submit information to prepare the uniform SMA should they have winning bids. If the bidder elects not to provide this information with the Part 1 proposal and does have winning bids, they will be required to provide it after the bid date. Next, the officer is required to make a number of representations and certifications, including accepting the terms of the uniform SMA and agreeing to the RFP rules. Bidders have the option to submit the representations required by the Part 2 proposal during the Part 1 window for early processing. Fifth, bidders that are foreign entities or relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor will be required to provide additional documents for execution of the SMA. Drafts of these documents can be submitted with the Part 1 proposal. And lastly, the sixth section is provided for bidders to explain why any of the required information as listed above was not provided or upload any additional documentation. As a reminder, the Part 1 proposal is due by Tuesday, February 24th. During the Part 1 window, bidders have the opportunity to request modifications to the standard letters of credit and the standard guarantee. This process is optional, and any proposed modifications should be provided in Microsoft Word format with track changes clearly showing all requested modifications. PECO will review requested modifications, and responses to the standard pre-bid letter of credit or standard guarantee will be provided within 2 business days. For the post-bid letter of credit, a response will be provided within 7 business days. Any new modifications are then added to the list of acceptable modifications that are currently posted to the RFP website, so any bidder can use an approved modification on these lists, even if they were not the one that initially requested it. You do not need to submit a redline version of the standard pre-bid letter of credit if you are utilizing modifications already included in the preliminary list of acceptable modifications, which is posted to the RFP website. We encourage bidders to review this list of acceptable modifications that have already been approved by PECO before proposing their own modifications. When you submit the online form, we'll promptly review your submission. After you submit, your access to the online form will be temporarily removed. You will either receive a complete notice, meaning all required information has been provided, or a deficiency notice listing the items that are deficient or require clarification. Bidders will receive notice about the status of the proposal on the same business day if the submission was received before noon. If the submission is received after noon, the bidder will receive notice by noon on the next business day. Bidders are generally given until the Part 1 date or one business day to respond to a first deficiency notice. Bidders that complete the Part 1 proposal will be notified whether they're qualified to submit a Part 2 proposal by the Part 1 notification date on Thursday, February 26th. The Part 1 notification also includes a credit assessment, a customized bid form, and instructions on how to submit the bid form and confidential login information necessary to participate in the bid submission training and on the bid date. Next, for the Part 2 proposal, bidders submit an online form with supporting documents, including additional certifications and representations made by the officer. RFP bidders that are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor or with a foreign entity as the bidder, guarantor, or principal will have additional requirements. For example, bidders relying on the financial standing of a guarantor must submit a letter of intent to provide a guarantee, which is signed by the guarantor. All bidders must submit a pre-bid letter of credit as a part of the Part 2 proposal. The pre-bid letter of credit must be submitted as an electronic PDF file via electronic means only to pecoprocurement@nira.com. All of these materials required with the Part 2 proposal are due by Thursday, March 5th. The pre-bid letter of credit must be in an amount of $250,000 per tranche bid on the residential and small commercial products and $125,000 per tranche bid on the CCI product. This means the maximum amount to post for a bidder planning to bid on all tranches available is $7.5 million for fixed price products and $750,000 for the spot price product. Please note that depending on the bidder-specific load caps based on the number of tranches currently being served, it is possible that you won't be able to bid on all of the tranches. All bidders must use the standard bid form of the pre-bid letter of credit or only incorporate approved modifications that are posted to the RFP website. I will now discuss the bid submission and post-bid processes. A bid is a price in dollars per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. The bid is automatically rounded to the nearest cent using standard rounding rules. The officer will be required to certify that the bids submitted are binding until 6 business days after the bid date. A bid must be supported by sufficient pre-bid security, and the independent evaluator will verify this is the case when reviewing a bidder's bid form. Bids will be evaluated by the independent evaluator on a price-only basis. This current slide provides an example of the bid form. The independent evaluator provides each bidder a personalized bid form to be submitted on the bid date, as well as for training purposes for bid submission training with its Part 1 notification. The bid form provides an area for the bidder to enter prices, where a price in each cell serves as a bid on a single tranche. The bid form will provide running totals for the bidder's convenience, as well as check whether the bids entered in the bid form exceed any load caps the bidder may have. Load caps will be hard-coded by the independent evaluator for each bidder. Bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and noon Eastern Time on Tuesday, March 10th, which is the bid date. Bids are submitted online through a secure file transfer system. A member of the independent evaluator team will call the bidder and confirm receipt within 30 minutes of receiving their submission. Bidders will have the opportunity to correct any errors if there are any, and for this reason, we encourage all bidders to submit early. Bidders will have at a minimum 10 minutes to resubmit a non-conforming bid form. This process is further outlined in the bidder guide provided with the Part 1 notification. By 3 p.m. on the bid date, the independent evaluator will inform any bidders that submitted bids whether any of their bids are being identified to the commission as lowest price bids. The results remain provisional until approved by the commission, whose decision is expected to be made by March 12th. Bidders are encouraged to participate in a training session on March 4th, during which members of the independent evaluator team will be available to answer questions about the bid submission process, and bidders will be able to practice the bid date procedures in full. Following the independent evaluator's notification to bidders on the bid date, bidders will be asked to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA and guarantee, if not already provided with the Part 1 proposal. The commission is expected to provide its decision regarding the results by March 12th, at which point the independent evaluator provides PICO with the uniform SMA, transaction confirmations, and guarantee. PICO will then execute these contract documents and send the documents to winning bidders to execute using a digital signature, as well as to post any additional security as necessary by March 17th. 15 days after the bid date, the independent evaluator will post certain information about winning bid prices on the RFP website, namely the weighted average winning bid price by product and the number of tranches of each product procured. The names of the winning suppliers will not be released. And finally, I'll provide some information related to the RFP website, picoprocurement.com. The RFP website is a central source of information related to the RFP, including supplier and regulatory documents, a data room containing historical data, a calendar page containing important dates related to the solicitation, a Contact Us page where you can register to receive emails regarding the RFP, and an archive page with materials provided in previous solicitations and the results of previous solicitations. Bidders can ask the independent evaluator questions through the Contact Us page of the website, pictured in the screenshot below, or by emailing us at picoprocurement@nira.com. The independent evaluator aims to answer questions within 2 business days and post questions and their answers to the RFP website on the FAQs page after removing any identifying information. This now concludes the presentation portion of the webcast.